Carioca Fletch by Gregory MacDonald. Copyright 1984 by Gregory MacDonald. This recording of the reading of Carioca Fletch was published by arrangement with Gregory MacDonald and was produced in 1989 by Books on Tape Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Neither this recording nor any part thereof may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authority from Books on Tape Incorporated. Please observe the following procedures as you listen to these tapes. If you have borrowed this book from your local library, please return it to them at the end of the agreed period. If you are one of our regular rental customers, you may keep your book for 30 days from date of receipt by you, but after that time we charge additional rental of 25 cents per day. Dates are checked by postmark. Please return this book at the earliest possible time so another subscriber can have the use of this recording. To return cassettes to us, simply make sure they are all packaged in their plastic cassette cases and in proper order in the mailing container. Kindly seal the mailing container for return. Postage is already paid. Drop in any mailbox for return to Books on Tape. Unless you are at home during the day, you will probably find it more convenient to have tapes mailed to you at your business address rather than your home. Reason is that postmen cannot leave packages if no one is there to receive them. Should a cassette fail to play properly, hold it flat in the palm of your hand and slap it smartly against a hard, flat surface. If this does not work, or if you cannot otherwise free the reels, and if you are a library customer, please ask your local library to contact Books on Tape for a replacement cassette. If you are one of our rental customers, please call us at our regular customer service number. Give us the name of the book and number of the cassette. We will immediately send you a replacement at no charge. Discard the broken cassette. Carioca Fletch by Gregory MacDonald. This book consists of 36 chapters and is 275 pages long. The following material appears on the dust jacket of the book. It's carnival in Brazil, and Fletch is fast becoming a carioca. He's stripped down to his shorts because of the heat, carries his money in his shoe because of the thieves, drinks guaraná, and is just watching the women walk, because that's the way Brazilians enjoy life. But some people think that Fletch is more Brazilian than he knows. In fact, people think that he's the reincarnation of a murdered Brazilian. And worst of all, the murderer thinks so too, and wants to stop Fletch before he remembers too much. Dedicated with affection and admiration to Gloria and Alfredo Machado, their family and friends. Chapter 1. Naturally, the samba drums were beating. Rhythms beside rhythms, on top of rhythms, beneath rhythms. Especially just before Carnival did this modern city of 9 million people on the South Atlantic reverberate with the ever-quickening rhythms of the drums. From all sides, every minute, day and night, came the beating of the drums. You cannot understand the future of the world without first understanding Brazil. That was the way the trim, 40-year-old Brazilian novelist Marília Diniz spoke, informative, instinctual, indicative. The umbrella over the cafe table on Avenida Atlantica shaded her eyes, leaving her mouth in the afternoon sunlight. She shrugged her thin shoulders. Unfortunately, Brazil is beyond anyone's understanding. Marília sat across from Fletch in a light dress with only straps over her pale shoulders. Marília Diniz was the rare carioca who never went to the beach. Laura Soares, more appropriately dressed in shorts, sandals, a halter, more appropriately tanned golden brown, sat to Fletch's right. Laura would always go to the beach. Fletch was dressed in the uniform he had learned to be innocent, egalitarian, shorts and sneakers. In front of Marília and Laura were glasses of beer, chope. Fletch had the drink he liked best in all the world, guaraná. Now that Fletch sees the Praia de Copacabana, he will never go anywhere else, Laura said. Maybe I will never even be able to get him to come back to Bahia. I'll go back to Bahia any time, Fletch said, if your father lets me. He'll embrace you, you know that. I don't know. The first truth about Brazil, Marília said, is its absolute tolerance.
Does Brazil tolerate intolerance?
I suppose so. Marília wrinkled her nose. You see, you cannot understand. Across the avenida stretched the huge, dazzling Copacabana beach,
from the Morro do Leme to his left, to the peninsula separating Copacabana from the beaches of Arpador, Ipanema, and Leblon to his right. On the beach, among the brightly colored umbrellas and blankets, were thousands of golden brown bodies, all ages, sexes, their swimsuits so small on them only their skin really was visible, exercising, taking turns at the provided chin-up bars, reclining on sit-up boards, running. Within sight on the beach, Fletch counted 14 soccer games in progress. Small children played at the water's edge, but most of the people in the water were doing disciplined swimming. Proportionately few on the beach were resting. The temperature was 33 degrees centigrade, about 90 degrees Fahrenheit. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the people's energy shimmered up from the sand more positively than reflected the strong sunlight. At street corners to the right and left of where they sat drummed samba bands. Boys, men, from 14 years of age to whenever, beat on drums of various sizes, various tones, as if this were their last chance to do so ever. The band to the right wore canary yellow shorts, to the left, cardinal red shorts. Immediately around each band, pedestrians stayed to give in totally to the samba a while, dancing on the sidewalk, up and down the curb, among the cars parked pridefully anywhere. One or two drummers might stop a moment to wipe the sweat from their chests, bellies, forearms, drink a chope to make more sweat, but a samba band itself never stops, when it moves, when it stays in one place. A samba band stopping is as fatal a thought as your own heart's stopping. And the people passing on the sidewalk in front of the cafe, the pedestrians going from corner to corner, band to band, businessmen dressed only in shorts and sandals, sometimes shirts, carrying briefcases, women in bikinis lugging bags of groceries, barefoot children running with a soccer ball, walked, lugged, ran, keeping the beat of the drums in their feet, their legs, their hips, their shoulders. This moving to the samba, instead of just moving, gives Brazilians the most beautiful legs in the world, having a true balance, an ideal proportion between muscular calves and slim thighs. The groups of gap-mouthed begging children, the cloth of their shorts worn so it almost did not exist, kept their bare feet moving to the rhythm of the drums, making the stillness, the steadiness of their huge dark eyes the more shocking, imploring. To provide a deception of class difference for the tourists, the cafe waiters wore black long trousers and wide-open shirts and real shoes. But even in their brushing crumbs from the tables, begging children away from someone they had implored too long, they somberly kept the samba beat. Cidade maravillosa. In his chair, Fletch stretched his arms over his head. Mysterious city, said Marilia. Mysterious country. Fletch said, the guidebook says something like, at first sight of Rio de Janeiro, instantly you forgive God for what's visible of New Jersey.
I liked New Jersey, said Laura. Isn't that where Pennsylvania is? I thought so.
If you cannot understand the future of the world without first understanding Brazil, Fletch said, I would like to understand more of Brazil's past. Granted, I came to Brazil rather quickly, without really expecting to, without being prepared. But once here, I can find out very little of Brazil's history. Even Laura's father. Laura giggled and put her hand on his thigh.
Brazil has no past. That's what makes us so mysterious.
Marilia shot a glance at Laura.
You have not heard of Queima de Arquivo?
A begging child came by and placed one peanut in front of each of them. Laura laughed.
A while ago, a Brazilian airliner crashed on a runway, as anyone's airliner might. Within minutes, a crew showed up to paint over the Brazilian, how do you call them, insignias on the airplane. It is our way of preventing what has already happened.
It means burn the record, Marilia said.
It means cover up, Laura said. It is the Brazilian way of life. That is why we are so free.
It has happened more than once, Marilia said. A government takes power. In disapproval of all that has gone before, it burns the records of previous governments. Like confession, the idea has been to give us a fresh beginning.
So we are a nation of anarchists, laughed Laura. We are all anarchists.
All histories are shame-filled, Marilia said. Brazil's shames we have expunged by setting fire to them, sending them away in the wind. At a little distance from them, the pixie, a boy about 6 years old, watched them with disappointment. They were not eating their peanuts. Marilia put her sunglasses on her nose and sat back in her chair. "And you, Fletcher?" Slowly, Fletch ate his peanut. Instantly, the small boy stepped forward and offered to sell Fletch a bag of peanuts. Fletch took Cruceros out of his sneaker and gave too many to the boy. He opened the peanut bag and held it out to Marilia. She shook her head. "Do you practice Quima de Archivo? Are you in Brazil to burn your record?" "Many are." "It would make him Brazilian," Laura said. "Honorary Brazilian." "Is that why Laura's father does not like you?" "My father likes him," said Laura. "Loves him. It's only that..." "Her father," Fletch said, "is a scholar, a professor at the university, a poet." Now a dozen begging children were around his chair, whispering at him. "Of course, Ottavio Cavalcanti. I know him well. Laura is almost my niece. She should be staying with me here in Rio." "He is intolerant of North Americans. I am a North American." Standing on the sidewalk near the curb, standing uncommonly still, was an old woman, a hag. A long, shapeless white dress hung from her neck. Dark pouches high in her cheekbones made it seem as if she had four dark eyes. All four eyes were staring at Fletch. "That's not it precisely," Laura said. "Fletcher can come here to Brazil, to sit in his café, drink Guaraná, and watch the women walk. My father is not permitted into the United States of the North anymore to read his poetry at Columbia University. My father is intolerant of that." "I have read your father," said Fletch. "He speaks on behalf of the people." Across the sidewalk, the woman in white was staring at Fletch as if he had dropped from the moon. "And there is something else." Laura shifted in her chair. "You must admit it, Fletch."
"What is it?" Marilia asked.
"My father feels Fletch does not see the difference in the Brazilian people."
"There is no equality like Brazilian equality," Fletch said. "I love that."
"It is not the equality." Uncomfortably, Laura was looking at Marilia.
"Oh, yes," Marilia said.
"My father says Fletch keeps trying to understand the Brazilian people through other people he has known. He cannot see the other side of us."
"There is much I don't understand," Fletch said.
"There is much you do not accept."
Fletch grinned at his own joke. "There is much I cannot see."
"My father..."
"Your father is a member of a candomblé," Fletch said. "An intelligent man like that."
Marilia twisted the cloth braided around her left wrist.
"But he loves Fletch. He says Fletch is surprisingly open as a person," Laura said.
"As a North American."
"You cannot understand Brazil," Marilia said from behind her sunglasses. "Brazil accepts thieves. The United States of North America will not accept scholars and poets who speak on behalf of the people."
"Am I a thief?" Fletch asked.
Clearly, the hag staring at him from across the sidewalk thought he was something extraordinary.
"You said you came here rather quickly."
"True."
"You said you did not expect to come here. You were not prepared."
"True."
"You do business with Teo da Costa."
"True."
"Teo Domiro da Costa is my good friend. In fact, I understand I will see you both at dinner at his house tonight."
"Good."
"Teodomiro da Costa makes a good business changing hard currencies, like dollars, into cruceros, into hard commodities, like emeralds, gold. He has become very rich doing so."
At the word cruceros, the pixies around Fletch stepped even closer and raised the pitch of their imploring whispers. Fletch said,
"I thought he drove a taxi."
"Teodomiro da Costa does not drive a taxi."
Fletch took more money from his sneaker and gave it to Laura to pay the waiter. When Laura paid, speaking Brazilian Portuguese, the bill was sometimes as much as 90% less. He gave some cruceros to the smallest begging child.
"Marilia," Laura said, "in Brazil, a man's past is burned."
"You may burn Fletcher's past," Marilia said. "That is all right, Laura. I do not want to see you burn your future."
"There is no future either," said Laura.
There is the piano. The Brazilians wish for a future, Marilia said.
Past future, Fletch muttered.
I said something wrong, Laura said.
You are staying at the Yellow Parrot? Marilia asked.
The Hotel Yellow Parrot was on Avenida Atlantica and known to be among the most expensive.
Yellow Parrot, said Fletch. You must admit some things in Brazil do not make sense.
Fletch is okay, Laura said.
Then she said something rapidly in Portuguese.
My father loves him.
Down the sidewalk to the right, stepping warily around the samba band, sweating in canary yellow shorts, through the dancers, came a North American woman, clearly from the United States, clearly newly arrived, in a light green silk dress, moving on her body as she moved, green high-heeled shoes, wearing sunglasses and stupidly carrying her purse like a symbol of rank dangling from her forearm. The California Empress. Laura put her hand on Fletch's forearm.
You okay, Fletch?
My God. I mean, why not?
Suddenly you turned white.
Let go of me. Fletch flung off her hand. He ducked beneath the table and began retying his sneakers. Instantly there were seven or eight heads of the Pixies under the table with him to see what he was doing. Laura's head joined him under the table, too.
Fletch, what's the matter?
Estu cam dor de estomago.
The Pixies groaned in sympathy for him.
Oh...
You are not sick from the stomach, Laura said.
Estu cam dor de cabeca.
Ooh, you are not sick from the head.
Febre, nausea, uma insolacao.
Ooh.
Seen relaxed in the shade under the table, Laura's legs were great to look at. Marilia's, although pale, were not so bad either. The sight made him feel better.
Fletcher, what is the matter with you? Why are you so suddenly under the table?
That woman in green passing by, don't look now. The heads of the Pixies looked back and forth from Fletch to Laura intelligently, as if they understood.
So, what about her?
She probably thinks I murdered her husband. Chapter 2
Janio!
With a frightening rush of long white dress through heavy green leaves, the old hag emerged from the bushes in front of them in the small forecourt of the Hotel Yellow Parrot. She was pointing her arm, her arthritically bent index finger, at Fletch's face.
Janio Barreto!
Fletch took a step back. His hand gripped Laura's arm. The hag took a step forward, her finger in Fletch's face.
Janio Barreto!
He thought they had done quite well. They had left Marilia at the cafe, walked half a block to their right, through the samba band on that corner, ignoring the gestures to stay and dance for a while, turned right, right again on Avenida Copacabana, along that a few blocks, turning right again at the street just beyond the Hotel Yellow Parrot, carefully looking first, hurriedly around the corner and the short way along the sidewalk and into the forecourt of the hotel. They were to use the beach entrance to the hotel, as Fletch was not wearing a shirt. He had forgotten about the hag. Now she was blocking their way into the hotel entrance.
Janio Barreto,
she accused, wagging her bent finger in his face.
Janio Barreto!
Laura stepped forward. She put her hand on the old woman's sleeve and spoke in a soothing voice. Fletch recognized the Portuguese word for mother in what Laura said.
Janio Barreto,
the hag insisted, pointing at him. Laura spoke quietly to the woman some more. The uniformed doorman appeared through the main door of the hotel and came through the forecourt to Fletch.
Is there a problem, sir?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. The two women were talking quietly.
Give her some money, the doorman said, for charity.
The hag was speaking rapidly now to Laura. The old woman kept glancing at Fletch. She was fairly tall and fairly slim, and clearly she could move fast to have gotten to the hotel before them, to have caught them. The leanness of her hands made her fingers seem all the more misshapen. Her brown eyes were huge, clear, and intense, her face more wrinkled than drying, caked earth. Thin, iron-gray hair fell from her head like photographed lightning. Her high, cracked voice came through a few blackened teeth. Now Fletch was hearing the Portuguese words for wife, husband, father, sons, daughter, boat. Listening to the old woman, Laura began taking long, surmising looks at Fletch. Her looks seemed unsure. Not of what the old woman was saying, but somehow of Fletch. She was looking at him as if she had never seen him before, or seen him in quite this way. His face politely averted, the doorman was listening too. "What is she saying?" Fletch asked. Laura waited until the old woman finished her sentence.
"She says you are Gianni Barreto."
"Who? What?
Gianni Barreto."
"Well, I'm not... whatever, whoever. Let's go." Laura's chin came forward a few centimeters.
"She says you are."
The hag spoke some more, clearly repeating what she had said before, something about a boat. Looking into Fletcher's eyes, not smiling, Laura said,
"She says you are her husband."
"Her husband, yeah." Laura repeated with firmness,
"She says you are Gianni Barreto, her husband."
Now Laura had the old woman's hands cupped in her own, gently, protectively.
"Of course," said Fletch. "Naturally, certainly. She's not the first to say that, you know. Or the second. Tell me, does she have a settlement lawyer in California?"
The doorman, having heard all, having understood all, turned his head and looked at Fletch. "Tell her she'll have to get in line with her settlement lawyer." He smiled at the doorman. The doorman was not smiling at him. Laura said,
"You are her husband, Gianni Barreto."
"Hope she sues for settlement under that name. What is this? What's going on?"
"Laura!"
Laura said,
"You died 47 years ago when you were a young man, about as you are now, when you were this lady's young husband."
"Good grief."
"You are, how do I say it, Gianni Barreto's aura, his other person, his same person."
Laura smiled. "She is glad to see you." "I can tell." Standing in the little forecourt of the hotel, surrounded by thick, deep green bushes, hearing the cars going by on the avenida, the voices of the children playing, hearing, of course, the beatings of the samba drums, Fletch felt coldness breaking over him, prickling his skin. Laura, still gently holding the woman's hands, Laura said,
"With this woman you have two sons and a daughter, grown now, of course. They have children of their own. She wants you to meet them."
"Laura, she wants money. I'm not taking on an extended Brazilian family." The doorman was still studying Fletch.
"You were a sailor," Laura said. "You earned your living from the sea."
The old woman had turned, was facing Fletch, presenting herself to him. Quietly, Laura said,
"She wants to embrace you."
"Laura, my God." Fletch could not help himself from moving somewhat backward, somewhat sideways. There were tears on the old woman's cheeks. Laura had let go of the old woman's hands. He felt a branch of one of the bushes against his bare back.
"Laura, what is this? What are you doing?" "The important thing is..."
The old woman came to Fletch. She raised her arms, put them around his neck. Approaching him, her eyes were soft, loving.
"Laura!"
The doorman held up his hand as if to stop traffic.
"Wait, sir. There is more."
The hag's cheek, wet with tears, was against Fletch's. She smelled terribly of cooking oils, of fish, and of a million other things. Her body pressed against his. He did not want to breathe. He wanted to gag. The branches from the bushes were stabbing into the skin of his back.
"The important thing is..."
Laura's head was lowered. She spoke respectfully.
"Is that 47 years ago, when you were a young man, in another life, you were murdered."
From the back of his throat, Fletch coughed over the old woman's shoulder. Then Laura looked up at Fletch, her brown eyes moving rapidly from his left eye to his right to his left.
"Now you must tell your family who murdered you."
Also with his eyes on Fletch's, the doorman nodded solemnly. Her eyes settled on Fletch's, and Laura said,
"Clearly you cannot rest until you do."
Chapter 3.
Of course, Fletch said, coming out of the bathroom, a towel wrapped around his waist. I really don't know how reasonable I want you to be. I am very reasonable.
Naked, long, lean, she lay across the rumpled white sheets of the bed reading Newsweek. Her wavy black hair fell over her face. The late afternoon sun through the shaded balcony window made consistent the gold in her skin.
Laura Suarez, he said. From San Salvador, da Bahia de Todos os Santos. Studied piano at the university in Bahia, then 2 years at the London Conservatory.
I did not like London Conservatory. There is little understanding of Brazilian music there. In a conservatory, they conserve music, you know. They don't like to let it expand.
Sometimes gives concerts, daughter of Otavio Cavalcanti, scholar and poet, and your mother cultivates orchids and takes photographs.
My mother grows flowers and takes pictures of them. She is trying to beat time.
Fletch opened the shade more. Their room was at the back of the hotel, overlooking utility areas. Through tall windows in the building across the area, Fletch watched a man painting a room. The man, in undershirt and shorts, had been painting the room during the day and well into the evening since they had arrived at the Yellow Parrot. It looked an ordinary, albeit big, room. The man was either a meticulous painter or had no other work waiting for him. Fletch said nothing for a moment. He had gone directly into the shower. The odor of the old woman had clung to him. His face was sticky from her tears, the back of his neck pasty from her caresses. He had gotten himself thoroughly soaped when the shower curtain drew back and Laura stepped in. She helped him wash, even putting him on his knees in the bathtub, doubling him over to scrub the back of his neck. She was kneeling before him in the bathtub, the shower water cascading off her head, shoulders, breasts. He began to clean her thighs with his tongue. After they messed up the bed and each other to the sound of the samba drums coming through the windows, and lying quietly a while until the sweat dried and made him feel cool, he went back into the shower. Standing at the window, he said, "Questions." Reading from the magazine, the lean, naked Laura said, "Half your diet should be carbohydrates." "You're reading about diets? You don't need to improve yourself."
"My mother will be glad to hear about the carbohydrates. Am I saying carbohydrates right?"
"No, but I understand."
"I don't think they talk about carbohydrates in London. I never heard the word."
"Pasta?"
"Don't you have any questions?" he asked.
"About pasta?"
Still, she did not look up from the magazine.
"About the woman in the green silk dress. I told you she probably thinks I killed her husband. She's come here to find me."
"So?"
"You haven't asked me about that."
"That has to do with your past. Anyone can make up a story and say it is the past."
"You're not curious?"
"About the future. What time is it?"
He looked at his watch on the bureau. "Nearly 7.
"We cannot be too much on time at the Costas for dinner. It is not polite to the servants. It gives them too much to do at once, makes them nervous."
"I have questions."
"Probably you are a North American."
"Your father is Otavio Cavalcanti. You are Laura Suarez."
"That is the past, Fletcher, old top."
"I don't get it."
"It has to do with who had the name in the past. Then you forget it. This article says you should eat much more chicken and fish than red meat. It says nothing of rice and beans."
"Feijoada."
"Are you going to talk to me about that old woman?"